Mooney Goes Wild, celebrating 25 years on RTE Radio 1.
Hello and welcome to the programme. Today we celebrate 20 years of Waterways Ireland. We explore the rich history and wildlife of Lough Erne, tap into a citizen science project encouraging biodiversity on the Royal Canal in County Westmeath, and we meet the volunteers who really care about Dublin's canals.
Well, I enjoy the canal itself, the cleaning of the canal, but also the biodiversity and watching out for things like rats, you know, who are more scared of me. I love to see them on the canal because they're part of the biodiversity nature of the canal and they're not in our houses. So it's a great job of camaraderie, working with people to keep our lovely canal clean.
They're one of our greatest geographical wonders, defining the landscape, creating an invaluable habitat for wildlife, as well as enriching our own lives too. Whether it's navigating rivers, chugging down canals, or strolling along lake shores, our inland waterways are an absolute treasure trove, just waiting to be explored. With COVID-19 making holidays abroad a risky business at the moment, staycations and daycations are appealing like never before. And as Waterways Ireland celebrates its 20th anniversary this year, we're about to embark on a fascinating journey of our own too. Before we cast off, let's listen in to Dr. Paula Tracy, Senior Environmental Officer with Waterways Ireland, speaking with Richard Collins.
Yeah, this is a great celebration. We're around for 20 years, since 1999. We're the largest of the six cross-border bodies that are established under the Good Friday Agreement. Our particular responsibility is the maintenance and the development protection of the inland waterways. They're incredibly rich in terms of their natural heritage. So whether you're on your boat or you're walking or you're kayaking, you're part of all of that rich ecology that's part of the waterways.
Now, if I were a species living in the canals, I think I would resent the developments that are taking place. You're navigating very tricky waters indeed, because they would like canals that are overgrown with all kinds of plants and so on and so forth. But you want to clear all that and put towpaths in and have lots of people going along, and cyclists and canoeists and boats of all kinds. And that is the sort of thing that us wildlife species don't really like. How do you navigate this tricky water?
Well, in any kind of development or any kind of maintenance we're doing on the canal, it has to be sustainable, and we have to take into consideration primarily the whole ecology of the canals. But it's very possible to have a sustainable recreational asset, that the canal is a recreational asset, and also maintain the ecological integrity of the canals. So, for example, there's a synergy in that we have to cut weed on the canals to facilitate boat movement, but it's also important for us to cut weed to ensure that the coarse fish, which the canals are famous for, and they're actually nationally important in terms of their coarse fisheries, to ensure that that coarse fishery thrives too. So there's a synergy there in terms of maintaining the canals for the purposes of boat traffic, and at the same time, ensuring that we have the conditions which are necessary for fish and other wildlife. And we actually are the body that are responsible for monitoring under the Water Framework Directive. So as you know, that's a combination of looking at the biological metrics, like looking at the insects and looking at the plants and looking at the quality of the water itself. And consistently, the canals have reached good ecological potential. And that's because, firstly, the water is extremely good quality. And secondly, we're providing the necessary macrophytes or plant communities at the edges of the canals, which are providing the insects, which are feeding the fish, and are resulting in this healthy ecological system. So, you talk about towpaths. Of course, you see on the towpaths again, of course, you've got terrestrial mammals, and you have some really good habitats, like we've got calcareous grassland in areas, so we have orchids in certain areas. So you're talking about management which is sensitive and which understands that there is ways in which we have to manage the canals so that we ensure that the terrestrial habitats are taken care of in terms of towpaths, that the riparian habitats are taken care of in terms of where we cut weed, that we don't cut back too far in terms of the reed fringes, and even in terms of the hedges, that we maintain them or the trees, so that we're ensuring that mammals or, you know, bats and any birds that may be nesting there are protected, and even the back drains that have newts in them. So we have to ensure that they're all protected. So we're striving for that balance.
It's been great talking to you. The canals have a great past, and thanks to you and your organisation, they will, I hope, have an equally great future.
Thank you so much. It was great talking to you.
Dr. Paula Tracy, Senior Environmental Officer at Waterways Ireland, speaking with Richard Collins.
I'm Edward Montgomery. I'm Secretary and Charity Manager for the Honourable the Irish Society, an historic charity which is governed by trustees in the City of London, and it owns property and assets in Northern Ireland and operates as a grant-making charity there. So we're here beside the Lower Ban River, which forms part of the assets of the society, and I also manage the fisheries as part of the job.
Now, one of the most popular pastimes on our waterways is angling, and there's nothing better than the sight of a salmon leaping clear from the fresh water as it returns back to its spawning grounds after its long sojourn at sea. While there are many species of salmon, those found in Ireland are Atlantic salmon. And it was the thought of a glance of one clearing the water that drew me to the Lower Ban River in County Fermanagh, where I met with Edward Montgomery.
Derek, you're very welcome to come and join us here at Carn Row this afternoon. You've arrived just at the afternoon changeover from the morning shift of six anglers to the afternoon shift of six anglers who are fishing for salmon below the weir here at Carn Row, which is located about halfway up the river between the sea, the Atlantic Ocean, and Loch Ney. This is Northern Ireland's largest waterway, and it's actually a cross-border catchment as well, with rivers that run into Loch Ney that go across the border into Monaghan.
Well, there are plenty of fishermen here today, but just two shifts?
Yeah, only two shifts. The anglers like a good long time fishing for the salmon. At the minute, we're in prime salmon fishing time. We've had very good conditions this season. Lots of salmon about. We historically, this is the best year we've seen for many, many years. So the anglers are very reluctant to leave the water until they have to.
I bet they are. Now, I read in the newspapers recently that there's an increase in the number of salmon coming back into our rivers. Is that true?
Yes, it is. I'm not a scientist, and there are lots of different theories as to why this should be. But all I can tell you is that we have firm, hard data counted by government scientists that tell us that 18,500 salmon have been recorded at the counter just upstream of us as of last week. Now, that is more than the entire season in 2016, which was the previous best recorded.
And what was that number then?
16,000.
16, so that's very good, and you're still in the middle of the season.
Yeah, that's right. There are more fish to come. The experts tell me there are still more fish down in the estuary, and there's plenty more fish here at Carn Row. In fact, if you're lucky, you might even get to see some of the salmon jumping in front of the anglers' rods.
That's just to tease them, that's all that's about.
That is. I should add, we are a catch-and-release fishery, have been for 8 years. Almost all of Northern Ireland is now, and that is a response, a government and scientist-led response to dwindling numbers of Atlantic salmon and the very perilous situation of the species.
So how do the anglers feel about that? Are they happy enough?
Initially, we lost about 40% of our anglers overnight. It was a very difficult period for a few years. But about 5 years ago, we started to recruit newer anglers who are more interested in sport fishing. And we've now built our business back up to where it was previously, I'm glad to say.
Now, you say business. Presumably, the anglers are paying for the privilege of fishing here.
Yes, they do pay. On a global scale, it's good salmon fishing, but it's also very good value. I reckon we charge only about a tenth of what you would be paying to fish on a river in Scotland, maybe on another private beat. And this is a private beat, so it is our prime fishing. An afternoon's fishing here would set you back £85.
That seems like a lot of money to me.
Yes, but as I said,
when you consider you can't keep your catch.
That's very true. That can be true. And the other important point is that as a charity, all that money goes into our charitable pot and is then distributed in community grants on a cross community basis across Northern Ireland to a great many educational and other projects.
I have to say, it was a lovely drive along once I got off the motorway. I mean, really, really pretty, beautiful countryside, rolling hills, and then to come around a corner and then look down to my left and then see the River Ban here, the lower Ban. Just gorgeous.
Yep, we're very lucky that the Ban Valley is in a beautiful, mainly rural area. There are a number of larger towns and villages that are dotted along the river, but it's mainly a rural zone. It's one that hasn't attracted its fair share of tourists up till now. And with our partners, Waterways Ireland, with whom we work quite closely with, there are schemes to develop riverside towpaths and more riverside facilities, whether it be anglers, bikers, canoeists, and all the other recreational activities that could go on here.
But if people want to come and fish here, what have they got to do?
They contact us through our office based in Coleraine, and permits can be bought there.
Can you buy on the day and turn up?
With difficulty. Usually it's booked well ahead. For some of the lesser beats, it's possible to do that.
Edward, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you. Very nice to talk to you, Derek.
A hungry feeling came on me stealing, and the mice were squealing in my prison cell. And the owl's triangle went jingle jangle all along the banks of the Royal Canal.
We're very fortunate in Dublin to have two canals, the Royal Canal and the Grand Canal. For decades, these waterways were an important means of transport for people as well as commercial goods, until they were replaced by railways and roads. Today, the canals are a hive of recreational activity for everything from boating to kayaking. And with colourful barges, a familiar sight, especially at this time of year, maintaining that picture postcard appeal takes a lot of hard work. Enter the volunteers, who regularly give up their Saturdays to clean up the canals and their banks. This report from Jenny Brannigan.
So I'm here today on Portobello Harbour, just beside the Latouche Bridge. People may know that when you're coming from Rathmines into the city centre, it's the bridge that you come over. I'm standing here with Stephanie Dooley, who's with Friends of the Grand Canal, and Eric Conroy, who's with Dolphins Barn Canal Biodiversity and Cleanup Group. So we're here looking at the canal, the Grand Canal. It's a beautiful, glorious, sunny day. And I'd like you guys to tell me what you see when you look at that canal.
At the moment, a little bit too much rubbish. Unfortunately, our group had to pause for a couple of months, but we're back in action this month coming, actually, all going well. There's a lot of algae actually on the water at the moment. I think that's with the good weather as well. The sunshine always brings a lot of it. I think the lack of swans is noticeable. There's usually a lot of them there. So at the moment, there's just a lot of people sitting around by the canal enjoying the waterway.
Well, I enjoy the canal itself, the cleaning of the canal, but also the biodiversity. Our stretch is very biodiverse, from Sally's Bridge to Dolphins Barn. They're lovely names, aren't they? Mm. And we look after the biodiversity. In conjunction with Waterways Ireland, we have a relationship with them. So it's a combination of cleaning and enjoying the biodiversity and watching out for things like rats, you know, who are more scared of me. I love to see them on the canal because they're part of the biodiversity nature of the canal and they're not in our houses. So it's a great job of camaraderie, working with people to keep our lovely canal clean.
Stephanie, it must be very frustrating. Your group meets at Leeson Street Bridge at 10 o'clock the first Saturday of every month, and you put in a huge effort. People are there volunteering their time for maybe 2 or 3 hours at a time. And then obviously with COVID, you haven't been meeting as regularly. And then when you come down to the canal, after all the efforts that you've put in over the years, is it very frustrating when you see that people are not getting that message, that self-pride, and they're just tossing rubbish back into the canal again? How do we get that message out that people need to be looking after this fantastic area? I mean, it's so beautiful to sit here and look at it. How do we get that message out that people need to take care of it?
Of course it is frustrating to see rubbish in the canal. I don't think it is as simple as just people throwing it straight in. You know, like there is other factors like, you know, wind blowing things in and stuff, which, you know, well, that's, I suppose, you know, local rubbish bins and that. But ultimately, it is still very rewarding. I think it was even interesting during COVID. I was kind of watching out for social media posts, and there was so many people really engaging with the canal and really, really enjoying it. You know, there was amazing videos popped up. There was one of an eel, you know, there was another amazing one. And these are on our Facebook page of heron catching two fish at once in between kind of the edge of the canal and a barge. You will get at the locks, you'll get kind of a gathering of rubbish, and that's something that we kind of could end up along the banks, or really focusing for one person could focus on an hour to get everything out from the surface. And I suppose we're doing that to make it look better, but also to stop it going into the sea as well is an important one, you know. So then once the locks open and stuff, it ends up, yeah, going out to sea.
Eric, you were mentioning about the biodiversity and, you know, really appreciating the natural sides of the canal, but when you have been cleaning, have you found anything of historical significance, any artifacts or relics? There was a really interesting project that they did in Amsterdam. It's called Below the Surface, and they dredged a canal, a river there, and basically found 70,000 items that they catalogued. So was there anything that you have found in your years of experience in cleaning the canal that you'd be able to catalog and give into any of the museums we have here?
It doesn't go back hundreds of years, but I would have found things like money laundering. We found money, helpful, you know, 20 euro note, which I brought home and washed and literally laundered. I was able to spend, and all sorts of bikes and scooters. Actually, I came across a gun once, unfortunately, and maybe it was a real gun, but it had been discarded at that stage when I was helping the next parish, Inchicore, Columns Group. But no, not things that you would see in the Spanish Armada. I haven't come across very old stuff in the canal.
Eric, why do you do it? You give up your time on a Saturday, you get out here and you clean up the rubbish that may have fallen in, may have blown in, people may have tossed in. What motivates you to get out there? And really, it's such a selfless task, but what do you get out of it?
It's become a drug for me over time. I just get a kick out of it. It's like fishing. I compare it to fishing, with somebody is calling in a fish. Mommy never gets a fish for 2 hours. I get lots of fish. And it just, there's actually thrill. And there's a male thing, maybe in terms of competition with the long picker, you know, to get something that's a bit out of reach. As a result, I've fallen into the canal twice. There's a challenge. And you look at it, if you get that thing that's out of reach and pull it in, it's a story, you know, and it's part of the bonding. And it just becomes a drug. And I'd like to see the canals used more than like they are in England, not just for people to walk along and enjoy the biodiversity, but to use the canal physically itself, getting from A to B on boats, and it's all part of the cultural life of the country, and it echoes back our heritage of why the canals were built. They go back 250 years. It would just add to the enjoyment of canal to see the canal used in different ways.
Jenny Brannigan speaking with some of the volunteers who care about Dublin's canals. The River Shannon is Ireland's longest river, flowing southwards for almost 400 kilometres through 10 different counties until it reaches the wide Atlantic Ocean. In County Galway, it encounters Mealich Weir, which lies in the Shannon Callows. Offering a unique ecosystem, it's an area renowned for its wildlife, as Terry Flanagan has been discovering.
Yes, Derek, and it's a part of the country that I've never been to before. I'm standing where three provinces, not just three counties, Leinster, Connacht and Munster, actually meet at this one spot. And there ain't many places in Ireland that can boast that. And here's something else, Derek. I must be at least 50 kilometres from the sea, but right here in front of me is a Martello Tower. Now, I'm familiar with Martello Towers along the coast, but I never knew there were Martello Towers this far inland. Aineró, you're the Western Region Manager for Waterways Ireland. Before we talk about the waterways, tell me a little bit about this tower and the area in general.
Well, you're dead right, Terry. We're where three provinces meet. It's where counties Offaly, Galway and Tipperary touch. They might touch on the hurling fields a lot, but this is where they physically touch. And the reason there's a Martello Tower here is we're at the foot of the Shannon Callows before we enter into the wide open expanse of Lough Derg. And there was a series of these towers built in this general location from Banagher down to Mealich. And they were built in Napoleonic times, where the British were worried that Napoleon might raise an army and try and invade this country and on then into England, Wales and Scotland and use this as the back door, if you like. So there was a series of Martello towers built right down the eastern seaboard and the south eastern seaboard, but also here along the Shannon, because the British army were of the view that if an invasion was to happen, they could let them have Connacht, but they weren't getting over the Shannon.
Yeah, it's really unusual to see this here. It's something totally different.
It is. And further up, you can also see where we have a really important structure across the river, which is the Mílic Weir, which we are currently doing the single biggest capital investment on since we restored the Royal Canal.
Well, tell us a little bit about this.
Well, this weir is really important in that it manages the navigation in this stretch right up to Athlone. And the project that we're undertaking at the minute is twofold. One is we are putting in a series of tilting weir boards that will allow us control the level on the weir during the summertime. And also we're putting a walkway in to reconnect counties Galway and Offaly. There'll be a walkway on top of it, which also links then back into the Barra Breffni Way, which can bring you the whole way down to the Barra Peninsula.
Yeah, because there is a lot of flooding down in this part of the country. You mentioned the Callows, and Callow from the Irish Collach means flood plain. So it must lead to some difficulties for your restoration.
Yeah, I mean, you're dead right. The word Callows in Irish means flood plain. And if you look at the Shannon in its entirety, it is a very slow-moving, flat river from top to bottom. And it, when in flood, it extends out. It's a bit like a saucer rather than a fast-flowing river. So the weirs right along the Shannon, including the weir here in Mílic, is really, really important to maintain navigation. And it is great to see that there is a whole new market of people now exploring this wonderful natural resource that is the Shannon, whether it's on boats, whether it's on land, whether it's going out fishing, whether it's on kayaks. The amount of recreational use that the Shannon is experiencing is proof positive that the tourism master plan that we have formulated is one that can put the Shannon at the centre of tourism in Ireland, but in a very sustainable way, looking at its key attributes, i.e. the navigation itself, but also the environment in which the Shannon creates, if you like, not only here in the Callows with its unique flora and fauna, but also around Lough Derg, Lough Ree, and right the way up to Lough Allen.
Now, you've mentioned the flora and the fauna. I can't wait to see that.
Well, look, let's get down from this Martello Tower, and I have a couple of people that I'd like to introduce you to, Terry. So let's go down and meet them.
Right, let's head off. Now, I've moved down to Mílic Weir, just along the Shannon here, and I'm joined by Catherine Hannan from the National Parks and Wildlife Service. Catherine, how's the corncrake doing?
Unfortunately, that's not a good story for us, because we lost the corncrake here in the Shannon Callows in 2015. And even though we monitor looking for it every year, it hasn't come back. So it's basically extinct now in the Shannon Callows. We have one of the biggest numbers of breeding curlew on Lough Ree in the Shannon Callows in all of Ireland at the moment.
And really, the curlew is probably the bird that we're most worried about at the moment.
It is indeed. And following that, we also have common scoter, which there is a national survey on this year. Mm-hmm. But we are finding good numbers again in Lough Ree.
So what you're saying really is that this inland waterway here, the Shannon River,
yes,
is extremely important for these birds, particularly these birds that are on the red list.
Absolutely. And we are doing national monitoring of specific species at the moment, the curlew, the common scoter. But with the lesser blackback gull, the interesting thing is that we decided to ring them and to find out where they were going. And we have found them down as far as Senegal. Can you believe it?
That's incredible.
A black-headed gull chick that was ringed on Lough Ree in May and June are now found down as far as Senegal and Portugal and Morocco in January and February.
That is absolutely incredible.
It is incredible.
And of course, you're right beside the bog.
Absolutely. We have Donal McAvaha, Senior Planner with Longford County Council, here with us today. We've worked really closely with them about rewetting the bogs and expanding out this habitat for all these lovely species.
Now, Donal, what's your role?
Hiya, I'm the Senior Planner in Longford County Council. But with the ending of peat cutting by Bord na Mona, we have this great opportunity in Longford, Roscommon, around Loch Ree, to renature the bogs. So we're looking at about 20,000 hectares of land in Longford, Roscommon. We're aiming to get it designated as a UNESCO biosphere reserve for nature purposes.
Now, explain renatured.
Well, at the moment, it's very simple. It means that Bord na Mona stopped cutting the turf. The bog is just left. And it's amazing within 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, how quickly these bogs green up again and how quickly nature comes into them. And they also fill with water because the pumps are turned off. So Knapoge Bog, for example, is now a large lake that we get about 150 Hooper swans coming in from Greenland into winter and roosting there. So that's a very simple example of what happens. In summer, what we've had this summer is once the bogs are abandoned, all the plants start coming back. So this summer they were full of flowers. That brings the bees and the insects. So this vast area that was, from a nature point of view, nutting, has suddenly been brought back to nature and is beginning to renature up, as I describe it, and the plants and the birds and the bees are beginning to come back in and recolonise it.
Well, there you have it from Mílic Weir here, a beautiful, idyllic part of the country and exciting times ahead.
Terry Flanagan coming to us from County Galway and historic Mílic Weir. A stone's throw from the busy town of Mullingar in County Westmeath, just off the beaten track, a 5 kilometre stretch of the Royal Canal is attracting wildlife in abundance. It's an area which, through a citizen science project, is being carefully managed to encourage biodiversity. Judging by the results, the hard work's certainly paying off. Éanann Ilana.
I'm here on the banks of the Royal Canal, just east of Mullingar, at a place called Baltrasna Bridge. And it's actually where the Royal Canal is going to go through a big limestone cutting. So I'm actually, as it were, up on a hill. The bank is so high up, I'm looking down into the canal. And it's really clean water. You can see right through to the bottom. And it's such a still day. It's a little bit misty. There's not so much sunshine. There's no wind. And I can hear all the birds around. And while it's a lovely thing to do to come to visit the Royal Canal, I've really come here to visit Leslie Whiteside, who is going to tell me all about it. And she's here waiting for me. How are you, Leslie?
Hello, it's lovely to have you again. Yes, not a great morning, but we are on the High Bank Path and it is so beautiful. We have worked fairly hard over a number of years just to keep it right for biodiversity. And you see there's a good tree line behind us. A nice grassy path with lots of wildflowers. Any sun, there would be lots of butterflies. And then a grassy slope down to the canal. So really, it's the best of all worlds here.
I'm looking here at a bug hotel, as it were, and it says the High Bank Path. This is a great edifice. Is there a group of you keeping an eye on this?
There is. It's called the Baltrasna Boreen Biodiversity Group. And it's really just a group of locals. And we just thought a few years ago that it would be a good thing to improve the habitats here.
And so you have, because obviously, as everybody knows, there's always been a towpath along the banks of the canal. And in a lot of cases, as in on the other side from looking over there, it's covered in tarmac and it's a really useful greenway cycle path for people on bikes and running. But this side, it hasn't been improved, if you could call it an improvement. Here we just have a lovely, ordinary path, no tarmac, no nothing. And I presume that's the whole design of this, so that all the verges are the way they should be.
It's absolutely the design. It's not strictly wild, but it's minimally controlled because obviously it's on a limestone path and you get all the flora, all the things like bird's foot trefoil, wide range of orchids, willow herbs, yarrow, others, such a range. And there are also the little ones like milkwort and eyebright and things, which you only get with fairly short grass. And if you don't keep that short, you won't get the butterflies like the blues and the small coppers and things like that. So it's a delicate balance of just keeping it sufficiently controlled. Also, of course, to stop the blackthorn coming straight back in where it was before we cleared the path, and you couldn't get through.
But you've got ash trees, you've got hawthorn, you've got some of the blackthorn there still. I'm looking at some
Gelder rose.
And it's like a line of trees. And then on each side of the path, we have this grassy verge. And this is where we have, I'm looking at this time of the year now, it's August, and a lot of the colours this time of the year are purples. Yes, so we've got the knapweed, we've got this willow herb, we've got some thistles over here. Orchids are purple as well. Are there any orchids around here?
Oh, yes. But, of course, we're too late in the middle of August for them. The last of the fragrant orchids has just faded this week because, as you know, they're the last. But, yes, we have common spotted, heath spotted. Oh, this is off the top of my head.
Pyramid ones, I
suppose. Pyramidal, yeah. Fragrant. And, of course, this year, for the first time, we spotted a few lesser butterfly orchids on part of the boggy bit.
That's very interesting indeed. Yeah. And is the fragrant orchid fragrant?
Oh, wonderful. I think it smells of clove, but I can never pass them, you know, without getting down having a good scent.
So you've butterflies then too. Is there something about the fritillaries? I thought I heard there were fritillaries here.
You did.
You mentioned blues and you mentioned the coppers and they're all great. But the fritillaries, the marsh fritillaries are really rare.
Yes.
So do you have scabious that they feed on?
We do, but it's slightly further east. But here until this week, there have been the silver washed fritillaries. And we might see 10, 20, but it's more or less July. It's tailing off. The marsh fritillary is about half a mile east on a boggy bit. And it's really, really exciting that we found them because this is only the third year we found them. Yes, lots and lots of devil's bit scabious. Now, it's just coming out. I was walking here the other day and it's just coming into flower.
Another blue-purple one, isn't it?
It's
a gorgeous colour of blue, that one is,
gorgeous.
Yeah. And, of course, the marsh fritillary butterfly is the only insect that we actually have protected under our legislation. And it's great to see it. More people finding it and having the place right for it.
We monitor it very carefully.
Look, there's somebody coming. I'm going to talk to him because I want to see what it's like to be on the water from that side. Hey, hello, come here. Can you talk to me for a minute? I'm dying to know what it's like to be on a kayak on the Royal Canal.
Hello, is that Aina?
Can you recognise me from that distance?
Yes. Lovely to see you. Give me a moment to paddle over to the bank and we can have a chat.
You have the advantage of me now. You know I'm Aina. But who are you?
My name is Pat Hendrick. I'm a member of Ribbontail Paddlers Canoe Club. It's paddling out from Longwood, just east of here, not too far from here, in County Meath.
Now, what I really want to know is, and this is something I really am interested in, it must be great to see the canal from being in the water. I'm only ever on the riverbank or the canal bank looking down, but you're coming along on the water. You must get a completely different approach to wildlife down below on the water.
Well, certainly it is a lovely aspect to view the countryside from, and there's quite a variety of wildlife as you paddle the various stretches. You know, there are particular parts of the canal that you would see a lot of swans at, swans nesting. Herons we would see quite a good view of. Aquatic life, fish, we would often see tench or bream in the canal, and then you've the more colourful rod along the way.
Do you get much insect life? Do you get damselflies, dragonflies, midges, mayflies? Do you get any of that? Or do you hate all those?
Well, certainly May time is, it's a very difficult time on the water. And if you get long, warm spells, it can be very, very irritating. Generally, when you're paddling, you know, you would be drawing in deep breaths, and if you have your mouth open, it does happen. It's happened to me. It's happened to many paddlers along the way.
You
would ingest some of them, and then you'd be, you know, trying to clear your throat for a while afterwards. But as I say, particularly around May time, flies, the mayfly itself, and some dragonflies, also we would see.
So it's very good then for, I mean, I know you don't like breathing them in, but it's a good indication of the clean water that's in the canal. And the canal is really, really very clean, isn't it?
It's one nice aspect of the canal. The water is very clear. It's actually crystal. If you know, it's a little bit in shadow here at the moment, just from the trees. But when you just go a little bit just the far side of the bridge, the water is really clear. You can see to the bottom of the canal itself.
It's such a pity that your kayak is only a one-seater job, so I can't hop on behind you. Listen, thank you very much, Pat. That was great talking to you, and you know I'm going to save up and buy a paddle and a canoe for myself.
I hope you do get the opportunity to get out in a canoe or a kayak at some point in the future. It's a really lovely pastime.
You're off now. Where are you going to go from here?
I'm going to continue paddling west towards Mullingar and explore the sights and sounds along the way.
Fair weather, fair weather. Isn't that what we say to fellas going off in boats? Fair weather, Pat.
Thank you, Aina. Next time I'll bring a two-person kayak and we can paddle together. All the best. Bye-bye.
Wasn't he great? Do you know him, do you?
No, I've never seen him before in my life, but it's great to see a kayaker on the canal. We only wish we had more boats, because, of course, if there were more boats, there'd be less weed, and Waterways Ireland wouldn't have to get out and cut them.
Do you get any otters?
Yes, we've otters. One of the members of the project has land that, you know, joins the Waterways Ireland land, and, of course, you can see them coming down the bank. So that's very exciting, really. Very obliging bird. And we have a kingfisher. But we don't see it as often as we used to. You remember, we had two very bad winters. And after that, we must have lost a lot of them because they couldn't fish in frozen water. And so it's a big treat now when you see one. It's unmistakable. But
yeah, no, a flash of blue up this way and a flash of blue back. Great to meet you, Leslie. I'm holding you up now. You Robert, probably want to get up and down here and count 45 more butterflies before your lunch.
Oh, 145. Great to meet you. Thank you so much.
Enini Lana and Leslie Whiteside along the banks of the Royal Canal in County Westmeath. Our next destination is a labyrinth of channels, bays and islands, and home to a rich variety of wildlife. Lough Erne in County Fermanagh has plenty of historical landmarks, such as Crom and Enniskillen castles. But Sheila O'Callaghan found herself drawn to the haunting view of Devenish Tower at the Lower Lake when she recently wandered along the water's edge.
As you can tell, there's hardly a sound where I'm standing, just the pitter-patter of rain. Lough Erne lies in County Fermanagh, and it's the name of two connected lakes, with well over 100 islands stretching as far as the eye can see. It's a place which is steeped in history, with ancient Celts, Christian monks and marauding Vikings. Here at Lower Lough Erne on Truro Jetty, Devenish Island is just across the water, where ruins of a church, an abbey and round tower still stand. And I'm also joined here by Billy Flynn, who's an ecologist. Billy, hi.
Hi, Julia. How are you?
Billy, looking out across Lough Erne, what do you find so important about this area as an ecologist?
Right. This is Lower Lough Erne. This is part of the second biggest of our rivers in Ireland. And this is the biggest lake system that we have. And it's also the second biggest lake system in all of these islands. And it's the continuity of habitat that makes it really important. And it's not just one habitat, it's a system of it. It's a series. You have all these lochs joined by rivers. And you can actually see, we're looking south now, there's a clatter of islands and some wonderful names, and Hare, Horse, Rabbit Island, and across there, just to the south, that's Devenish Island. And this is a place where we work with Waterways Ireland, and we have a wonderful project called Island Explorers, where we combine heritage, ecology and actual physical exercise, the rowing of Lough Erne. Now, I know Olivia from Row the Erne is here. She'll tell you about that later. And you have Amy from RSPB who'll tell you about the birds. But all of these elements combined.
So what is so attractive about this location for wildlife?
Well, here we're here at Truro, and here you can see that trees are very, very important here. And this is a series, if you like, of like stepping stones, where you have these islands that are absolutely undisturbed. Here you have riparian woodland, native species willow, alder, ash, and they kind of fringe the urn as we're looking up and down it, and also within it on the islands. These are very, very important stepping stones for a number of species. Now, the otter does very, very well here, and these areas that are given to flooding during the winter are very important for wading species. So it's if you like, this is an ecological corridor, and that's without even discussing the things that live in the water, what lies beneath. You know, this is very, very important system for fish.
Well, here with me too is Amy Burns, who's the estate manager for Lower Lochearn with the RSPB. Hi, Amy.
Hi, how are you doing?
We're here on quite a rainy day, Amy, so there don't seem to be too many birds out on Lochearn today, but it is renowned for its waders, isn't it?
It is, yeah. So you can understand, you know, Fermanagh being as wet as we are, and the old saying goes, is Fermanagh in Lochearn or is Lochearn in Fermanagh? It's a fantastically great place for water birds, as you can imagine, but RSPB here in Fermanagh are concerned with breeding waders and the number of breeding waders that we have out in our islands on Lochearn. So talking about species like curlew, which is all over the news at the minute, you know, and the serious declines that are facing species like curlew to lapwing, which is another bird of farmland, and redshank and snipe. So these are all birds we manage on the islands.
Well, the curlew is on the brink of extinction, we understand. But you do have a cohort here, do you?
We do, yeah. So unfortunately in Northern Ireland, you know, we've seen declines of 89% in these species since the 80s. And in the Republic of Ireland, it's been as significant as 97%, you know. So we have a very critical role, really, in making sure these species don't go extinct within the island of Ireland. We have 39 breeding pairs that we manage for on our Lower Lochearn Islands Reserve. But Fermanagh in general and the lakelands around Fermanagh hold about 60.
Where are they today?
So it just happens to be the very tail end of the breeding season now in August. And the birds have thankfully successfully bred on the islands. They'll have reared young, and they'll have taken those young now off towards the coast for the winter.
Olivia Cosgrove, you're the founder of Row the Urn, which is a community organisation, I understand, Olivia, which helps people get out onto the water.
That's right. I mean, there's nothing like it than getting people out in the water and giving them a view of their own locality from a different angle. And very often they're surprised at how beautiful that view is from the perspective of the water. So we really enjoy that. So we're a community organisation. We're based in Enniskillen. We were set up in 2014 when we decided to build a 33-foot curra, a skin boat, that would be, people associate more with the sea, but we know that these boats were used on the inland waterways because Caesar documented it in his diaries when he was in England. So we know these boats were on these local waterways, and we've a lot of fun with it.
So you've recreated the real curragh that would have sailed on waterways such as this?
That's right. We row with 10 people, and we have two sails. We had a lot of fun building it, and we've more fun rowing it.
But it's not running at the moment, unfortunately.
Yes, unfortunately with COVID-19, you know, we're respecting all of the rules and regulations, and we just feel it's inappropriate to have the boat on the water simply because of social distancing. So what we're doing is we're saying to folk, you know, find another way to get out on the water. That can maintain social distancing, like paddling or hydro biking or swimming. And so we're still having a lot of fun, and that's the main thing.
And rowing across the curra, can anyone do it?
Absolutely. That's the wonderful thing about rowing, is it's for everybody. And we've had every age group. You know, the oldest has rowed it has been 94. The younger, we've had two-year-olds on the boat with their mum and dad. So it's there for everybody, and that's the key thing.
Each island, I have no doubt, has its own kind of personality, its own story,
yes, right.
Its own wildlife.
Yes.
You must have some really unique experiences with wildlife while you're on the curra.
Absolutely. I mean, that's one of the beautiful things about the curra, is that we're silent. You know, all you hear is the swish, swish of the oars. So wildlife is often very comfortable with us passing and getting that bit closer, whether it's a heron hunting or, you know, a family of otters crossing the river. We don't pose that threat to them because we're quiet. And we had a beautiful story one time. We were coming through a narrow gap called Friar's Leap that only shallow boats can go through. And it's one of these gaps that you have to get a bit of speed up. And with our oars out, we're 30 foot wide. So we get a bit of speed up, we tuck in our oars like a swimmer tucking their arms into their body, and we speed through this gap. And as we came out of the gap, a white eagle was flying by, and it looked across at us, and I knew by it it was startled by the fact that this very large boat appeared. And it was just that 10-15 seconds of watching this majestic bird fly off, you know, the king of the skies. So moments like that are very, very special.
A trip to Lough Erne in County Fermanagh offers a whole diversity of experiences, as Sheila O'Callaghan discovered when she recently travelled there. Now, the beauty of our waterways is that so many of them are within easy reach. Just off the M50 motorway in Dublin, in the midst of multiple road intersections, train lines and housing developments, lies a hidden haven of tranquility. But something even more unexpected can be found there. So let's go there now with Eric Dempsey.
Well, it's a very wet and windy day, and I'm standing here on the banks of the Royal Canal. Now, being in Northside Dublin, I was born along the Royal Canal, but I'm out in what appears to be the countryside. There's beautiful trees here, there's flowers, there's grass. The Royal Canal is right beside me, and there's a greenway just across, right beside the other bank of the canal. But of course, we're right in the Dublin suburbs here. A train has just gone by. We have the M50 just behind us. We have city traffic going in and out along the Navan Road. And we have this little bit of wilderness along the Royal Canal. And I'm here with Cormac McCarthy, the Heritage Officer of Waterways Ireland. Tell me a little bit where we are. Tell us a little bit about this particular area that we're standing in.
Well, Eric, like you said, you'd think we're in the middle of the countryside here, but we're actually in the middle of a really rich tapestry of heritage. Like I said, we're just inside the M50. We're very close to the Royal Canal Aqueduct, where the barges come over the M50, and a lot of people mightn't realise that. We have the industrial heritage of the canal itself. We have the rich built heritage of the locks and the gates. You mentioned the newly opened greenway across from us. But of course, the canal is very rich in biodiversity. It's a proposed natural heritage area from where it starts in Dublin the whole way to Clondra in County Longford. And here we have the canal, the riparian fringe. We have woodland, trees, and of course, a really rich grassland habitat as well. So about 3 years ago, we were approached by the Royal Canal Amenity Group, and they were interested in setting up a community apiary with beehives. We sat down, we went through our mapping, we tried to find, you know, a suitable site, and this is where we are today, with 7 hives and lovely rich grassland and floral diversity to feed the bees.
That is absolutely amazing. Of course, we have all of these wonderful flowers, and what I've been impressed so much by is the fact that this particular section is wild. I love butterflies as well, and I'm getting into moths, but I'm trying not to. But, you know, on a place, except for today, it's so wet, but on a day like today, if it was sunny, this place would be just, you know, alive with biodiversity, with butterflies, with bees and birds and everything. So you're saying that we have hives at the end of this particular cul-de-sac. And how long have these hives been in place?
So the hives have been in place now for about 3 years. It's also very much, we were signatories to the All-Ireland Pollinator Plan. The canal is very important. Like, it's going through Dublin City, and it's this green blue lung that's going through the city the whole way out into the countryside. So not only are the beehives here, but we've engaged with the Royal Canal Amenity Group, and we followed the Pollinator Plan guidance, and this area is managed accordingly. So not only is it good for the bees and the hives, it's good for other wild pollinators.
So what we should be doing now is going down maybe and having a look at the actual hives themselves. And so maybe we'll just follow down along the track and see what we find.
Yep, perfect, let's go.
So we're just walking along this, I suppose, lightly trodden path. And here, of course, are our beekeepers. Hello, guys.
Hello.
How are you?
So, Eric, I'd like to introduce you. We've got Circa and Paul Keane, and we have Sandra Convery.
Hello. Hi, how are you?
How are you?
Nice to see you.
Well, we've chosen an absolutely wonderful day to come and look at bees. Do they like wet weather?
Well, no. The wet, the cold, the wind, none of that is really a bee-friendly weather. They're much happier in a bit of sunshine.
So all you tree guys are all, you know, all suited up in very flattering beekeeper suits.
Well, thank you very much.
But are the bees aggressive this time of year? It's August. Or is it just a safety thing that you always have?
I suppose August is when, you know, we will have come in and disturbed them a bit in checking them. We may have taken some honey already this time of year. So they're a little bit aware of the fact that they're, you know, when we come to the hives, we're probably taking something off them. But we would always wear the suits anyway for safety. It's always important to be protected, and it stops you from getting stings, which is never pleasant. So,
a mad question: do you become immune from stings after a while? Do they hurt as much? I haven't been stung from a bee in a long time, and I do remember that sting was very sore. But like, do you get sort of used to it?
Yeah. So maybe it'd be better to ask my dad, Paul. He's been beekeeping since he was 17, so he has a longevity in working with bees that I don't have as of yet.
Well, no, beekeeping, getting a sting is never pleasant, but it is part of the activity, unfortunately. And even if you do have gloves and gear on, you're going to get stung from time to time. In the early part of the season, I'll usually go out without gloves. And it's a lovely feeling to have the bees on your hands. But this time of the year, naturally, as Sarah has explained, they're a little bit more defensive. There are going to be wasps and other bees trying to attack them, and maybe they remember that in the past history bears used to attack them at this time of the year, and they seek to defend themselves.
You've been raised with bees. This is your dad.
Yes.
And so you've been born and bred with bees.
Yes.
Sandra, what's your story? What are you doing in a bee suit? Where did you get involved in this?
Well, I walk along here. I only live down the back on the River Road. And I came up one day and I seen that the bees had swarmed. So I contacted the Canalways Ireland to find out who owned the bees, to contact the owner. And that's when they gave me Paul Keane's number. So I contacted Paul and we came up together and he brought the bees back in. He was able to capture them. And I had told him that I had done a course, but I hadn't quite finished it. So he invited me to come, which was very good. Come and help him and to learn. So that's what I did. So I come up with Paul and keep an eye on the bees and help him out, because the only way is hands on, I think, for to really, really, you know, learn about the bees.
Are we, Circa, are we going to get hands on with some of the bees?
Well, we can go down and have a look and see how happy they are. We can open up the hive and see how they're doing.
Let's do that. Well, I've never thought I'd ever see the day where I'd be standing in a beekeeper suit. So we've just geared up and we have netting over our heads and half beekeeper suit on. And Paul, you have a bellows there. It's like a producing smoke. What's in that?
This is wood chippings, or you can use anything. You could use old sacking or cardboard. And the purpose of that is to produce a nice, soft smoke. It's not too hot. The bees are pacified by this. You'll notice it later on.
Yeah.
You give them a little blow of this, and it causes them to put their noses into the honey, their noses in the trough, and they're occupied in doing that rather than chasing after the beekeeper. And so that allows us then to manipulate the hive. But we're going to be today now, because the weather's not good, we're going to confine ourselves to just opening the top of the hive. And we're going to see in the hive we're going to choose, you'll see that there is a lower box, which is bigger than the two other ones. That's the brood box, where the queen has been laying eggs and producing brood. And then above that, then, we have what's known as the supers, because they're above. And in that, we hope that there's honey to be found. And we're going to check and see.
Okay, here we go. Are we all ready?
We are.
Now,
wow, so here we are.
We've opened up the top, and
so I've just taken
a lot of
the lid off the hive, and I'm now levering this off. And so this is the super. This is where the honey is stored.
Okay, and just for the listeners at home, I'm looking down. There's about seven or eight sort of lats, and I can see honeycomb in that, and there's hundreds of bees crawling all over that.
So I'm very gently levering out this frame here.
And at this stage, there's a lot of bees flying around.
There's a lot of bees, and so I'm moving very gently and very slowly in order not to upset the bees. There we go.
Oh, wow.
So now you can see this is quite heavy. It's full of honey.
Oh, wow, look at the honey in that.
And you can see the bees here with their heads in the honeycomb.
Yeah.
They're having a look there. There's some floating around, and there's some you can see them moving there as they're working away with the honey.
That's amazing. That's an experience I've never ever had in my life.
Close this up again now. Thank you very much, Sandra. Happy out.
Well, I think we'll just exit stage left before the bees get too angry with us.
Indeed.
That has been just a wonderful experience. Thank you so much, guys.
You're very welcome.
Eric Dempsey. That's all we have time for today. Until next week, goodbye.
Tonight's Mooney Goes Wild was produced by Sheila O'Callaghan. You can find out more details about the programme at rte.ie/Mooney.